Les conférences du Collège de France.
Bonjour, bonjour à toutes, bonjour à tous. Bienvenue pour notre troisième séminaire de la série Agir pour l'éducation. À part mon introduction, le séminaire ce sera donc en anglais, mais avec une traduction simultanée en français. Je vois pas beaucoup de casque audio dans la salle, donc ça veut dire que vous êtes tous anglophones, ce qui est très bien. Mais si jamais c'est que vous avez oublié, vous pouvez vous saisir d'un casque afin d'écouter la traduction directement. La raison pour laquelle l'exposé est aujourd'hui en anglais, c'est que nous avons la chance d'accueillir Abhijit Banerjee, qui va nous parler d'un sujet qui est très important pour l'éducation en particulier, qui a beaucoup été, que Georges Charpak en France a beaucoup, sur lequel Georges Charpak en France a beaucoup insisté, qui est la question du sens critique et du développement du sens critique par l'éducation. Et ici, donc en passant par, il va nous montrer les résultats d'une expérience très intéressante et sans dévoiler les résultats, et qui a eu beaucoup de succès absolument impressionnant d'apprendre aux enseignants à enseigner le sens critique. Donc je laisse la parole à Abhijit Banerjee. Je reviendrai juste pour parler des prochains exposés tout à la fin de cette réunion.
Thank you for having me. As Asa said, we are going to talk about critical thinking in the context of primary education in Uganda. This is part of a joint work with Nava Ashraf, who's a professor at the London School of Economics, and Faisal Nourani, who is a postdoc at the University of Chicago and who spent a lot of time in Uganda making this experiment happen. In terms of very abstract background, there's a large body of evidence, as you might imagine, on teacher training. This is one of the biggest pieces of spending for any education system. Once you leave out salaries, it's often, and buildings, it's really the other very big piece. So it's a big, and I think mostly it would be reasonable to say that professional trainings have been disappointing, that when there have been rigorous evaluations, most of them find that these trainings don't do very much. Now, there's exceptions to that, and the exceptions are also interesting and specific. The exceptions are what are sometimes called structured pedagogy, or in a sense versions of giving teachers a very simple and very clearly delineated program to implement. So you tell teachers, do this, then do that, then do that. And there are different versions of that, including some we have worked on, which we call teaching at the right level. These are successful. They are often, you know, the World Bank and UNICEF and several other institutions recently concluded a survey of the things that work in education. It's a panel called GEEAP, and the panel concluded that these two interventions were exceptionally the two very cost effective and successful interventions in education. So they were really, they sort of stood out. So it's not that, so in other words, what I'm saying is that if there is evidence of success in changing pedagogy, which is sort of the goal, or at least modifying pedagogy, which is the goal of teacher training, the success is very clearly from being quite, let's say, directive. It's in telling teachers, do this, then do that, then do that, then do that. That's based on, I think, a broader thinking that maybe the teachers are insufficiently trained, or that they are, they're unable to, focus on the right thing, so they need to be told what to do. What we're going to talk about is a very different kind of intervention, a kind of intervention that actually emphasizes sort of what sometimes we think of as being a primary quality of teachers, which is that their ability to make you think about things in different ways. So it's an intervention where, and I'll say a lot more about it, where the emphasis is precisely not on content, precisely not on the steps the teacher should take, but kind of the opposite, to give teachers tools, or at least get teachers used to the idea that their job is to make people think, to make them think about how to ask questions, how to pose sharp questions, how to develop arguments, how to take things that are in your context and not in the textbook and turn them into some form of scientific observation. So very much engaging with the ground reality through a lens of science. So the intervention comes out of, I think the motivation is sort of at one level very clear. It's an invitation to think about, is it possible to get teachers to be more actively pedagogical, being engaging with the students, making them think rather than telling them things. And that's a distinction I'm going to emphasize, the distinction between telling students things and making them think. So I'll come back to that point multiple times. It's not that teachers don't often complain. So it's not that when in particular in the world of structured pedagogy, you often hear that teachers saying, look, but we don't particularly enjoy teaching students in very ways in which give us no freedom. We'd like to do the ways we would like to do things, but this is not going to work because the school system demands that a certain material gets taught, and a certain material gets taught requires us to follow a particular particular sequence of steps. So we are better off sticking to the existing styles of teaching. So there's a very clear, it's not so sometimes we have used the term tyranny of the curriculum. Esther and I have used this term often, and it's certainly something that we're not going to get rid of. So this is not, in other words, we're not going to liberate teachers from the curriculum, even though that's often what they say as a justification for being, not being very engaging, just kind of being mechanical. They often say that, this is because we have to cover the curriculum. We're not going to liberate them from that. On the other hand, there's another body of work which shows that maybe as a result of being very, their fealty to the curriculum, they are often unable to use sort of obvious, for example, Esther and others did these studies where they prepare children, very young children, preschool age children, in what you would call pre-arithmetic. So they were, and showed that indeed they can be prepared and they can be better at pre-arithmetic than people who are in the control group. So it can be done, and this makes them more open to better at learning mathematical ideas. And then what they found was that left to itself, that has no effect on when these children go into school. They don't learn more because they have had this pre-arithmetic training. So that's the kind of thing that suggests that, you know, teachers are following a track. They're not engaging with the fact that these children actually could do more if they were given a chance, but they're not engaging with that. So as a background to all, much of what I'm going to say is this puzzle: can teachers be encouraged within the existing school system to be more engaging, engaged with what the children know and think, and trying to get them to think more? So is that possible within the school system? Or is it the case that given the structures that exist, all you can do is change the structures? You can introduce structured pedagogy, but you can't really get teachers to teach the same material differently. So that's the question, and it's a first order question, because of course if we think that teachers are a resource, and it's an enormous amount of investment that almost every country puts in. They take some of their best talent, they put them into education systems, they pay them a whole lot of money. And the question is, can you make better use of them? And is it the case that basically, you know, all you can do is you can move, tell them to do this or that, or can you actually let loose their imagination and talents? That's the question. We're going to tell you about a randomized control trial of a learning to learn program. The program is about getting teachers to be, to change the way they teach based on opening them up to ideas about, you know, how they themselves learn about the world. So it's a teacher training program and we're going to look at whether a teacher training program that focuses on critical thinking, on being open, asking questions, rather than a program that's about content. So it's very specifically a program that's not about telling the teacher, here is more mathematics or more science. And I'll tell you how that's implemented, but it's very explicitly not about putting more content into the teachers. Can we, by just getting them to, you know, maybe articulate their thoughts differently or think differently, get them to teach better within the existing education system and generate better outcomes for the children? So I'll show you something on it, but the focus is not on whether by getting the teachers to do critical thinking, or training the teachers in critical thinking, or inviting them to be more involved in critical thinking, can we improve the critical thinking of the students, which inter alia would be a good thing too, but rather on can that actually make the teachers better at the task that they are supposed to do, which is to get the children to do better in standard exams. So it's a very much a focus which says it's not saying we're going to get the teachers to get the children to do something different. It's saying we're going to get the teachers to do what they are supposed to do, and can they do it better? It's going to be for, so the intervention was teacher training, it was, I'll tell you more about the training, 40% of the children in each school on average were trained, and we're going to look at the effect on upper primary children. Eventually, I'll also talk about what happens to the children when they go to secondary school, but we'll come back to all of those things. So this is the headline result, and it should impress you. This says that 50% of the children passed this is a board exam. So an exam that the Ugandan government holds. It's not take a school exam. It's an exam that all children in Uganda, in order to go to high school, have to take this exam. They have to pass this exam. If you don't pass it, you don't go to high school. 50% pass in a given year. That's the control group mean. In the schools that got this training, which I'll tell you more about, 75% passed. So that's the headline result. You can see that involves, if you look at the standardized scores, it's a distribution that's the blue distribution is simply shifted to the right everywhere. It's not a matter of some children benefited, all children essentially moved quite dramatically to the right. So that's the headline result, and that's the good news, obviously. And when we look at in 4 years after they completed upper primary, so they are now in high school, we see that they are more likely to be in school, and so they're not surprisingly, since they more likely to have passed the exam, but it continues in the sense that in Uganda, people who fail drop out, and you don't you see that the effect remains quite large. It's still a quarter larger. What's the history of this program? It's interesting. The history. In the 1970s, a set of PhD students from the US who were mostly in the sciences and were frustrated with education and inspired by a Brazilian educationist called Paulo Freire, who of course many of you know about. Paulo Freire inspired a lot of them by sort of suggesting that the education systems are broken, and I'll come back to Paulo Freire's words quite often, and inspired these PhD students to move to Colombia, to rural Colombia, and start an NGO called Fundeac. The Fundeac was famous but it was actually not training teachers. It was training youths to be better citizens, and better citizens by having a more scientific attitude towards questions, to be leaders of these communities for solving problems in agriculture. There was very much a focus on the scientific mindset, but a scientific mindset addressed towards youths. In the early 2000s, somewhat entirely fortuitously, I was on the board of a funding vehicle that the Hewlett Foundation had created. And as a part of that, we funded an experiment for moving an experiment, not a randomized experiment, just an effort to move this Fundeac program to Uganda. The Kimanya Nagio Foundation actually is the child of that set of efforts, and then they adopted the ideas of Fundeac for training teachers rather than training young men and women. They were training teachers on how to teach. What do they do? So it's a quite quite an elaborate program in the sense that you have, three separate phases, each of which you go once a week for training. It's for the full weekend, so it's quite a lot of training. What happens in the training? What happens in the training is an example is this, which is that there are teachers first make some shapes out of clay, and then there is someone who is specifically designated as not being a trainer, and the person who is their kind of their coordinator, if you like, is someone who is typically a young person with a high school degree, often not less educated than the teachers, who's the animator for this gathering of teachers, and who asks them, well, what is that shape you've made? And they say, that's a cube. And then they say, well, why do you say it's a cube? What is it about, what makes it a cube, given that it's not entirely, so this is kind of a Platonic question, it's not entirely perfectly a cube, it has some bumps, what makes it a cube? So those kinds of questions, that's one example, obviously, to keep it going for a year, you need more than one question. So you get them to talk about concepts, to be articulate about concepts, to get used to the idea that, you can be asked random things, and then you have to figure out a way to have a vocabulary to talk about it. So they get used to what the process is, in a sense, building a vocabulary for talking about questions that don't fit directly into some curriculum. So there's not an answer, pre-digested answers are discouraged, and they're encouraged to sort of formulate their own propositions. So many of the things that are emphasized, and one is, as I said, using precise language, describing the world, but also designing experiments. And experiments doesn't again mean an RCT. It means, how would you know if this is true or not? Ask yourself the question, how would you know? So thinking about those questions, thinking about what are objective statements, what are subjective statements, etc. So these were teachers were encouraged to this sort of continues what I said before, which is that they were encouraged to talk about people, and and then you realize that when you say your perception of someone is different from somebody else's, that these tend to be subjective judgments as against objective judgments, and so on. They're also encouraged to understand that by going through this process of asking questions, of engaging with the questions, rather than by reading from the textbook, you get not possibly the same answer, but you get it in a different way, that you come to a, and all of this is very much related to Paulo Freire's thoughts that teaching should not be what he called like banking. He didn't like bankers, and he thought teaching was too much like banking, meaning it's about putting things in an account in your head, and they should be more about engaging with the material in a fluid way. Not about, one person comes and puts something in somebody else's head. So very much his, if you read Paulo Freire, he It's almost the first thing he keeps saying. So I think that that relates to these ideas of, you know, not assuming an answer, focusing on asking questions, not assuming that you know the answer, and not assuming that there's an obligation to know the answer. That the answers are come out of our inquiries. We don't need to know the answer ex ante. So both the humility part of it, but also the openness to data. That you once you have the humility, you can then say, I don't know, but we can figure it out. So going from here is the answer to I don't know, and it can be figured out. So all of these are related thoughts. I'm going to let you read this. It's not entirely in perfect English, but it's a transcription. So I'll let you read it. I think the this key sentence to me is, even you who doesn't feel comfortable, eventually by the end of the training you would have developed that confidence and comfort, and holding each other, because when you see someone is not very comfortable, you keep on trying to keep in, and you find eventually someone comes in. So it's this idea that, you know, you get to knowledge by exchange of ideas rather than by reading a textbook. So that's very much, this is, all of this is a bit, you would imagine, hopefully these would be intermediate outcomes. You would think that the classrooms, the children would be more engaged, they would be asking more questions. So intermediate outcomes that we'll look at are engagement. Teachers would also talk to the children more, and then therefore, and maybe talk to other teachers more. Because if the context is not one where we are supposed to know, and therefore we don't dare ask questions because it will reveal our ignorance, but rather we know that not everyone knows everything, but we can all figure it out, then you can exchange ideas more comfortably. And you may actually, in the process, you may actually get to know more about your students as well. Because, you know, once you are open to the idea that your students are also potential sources of knowledge, or they are potentially, you know, just another, they'll have another view and you can learn from them, you can talk to them rather than talk at them. You can talk, have conversations rather than announce things to them. So by, and that process, you might actually get to know more about the students. So we'll look at if they know more about the students, we'll know, see if the classroom observations, are the students more engaged and things like that. And one hopes that they will spread to other things where this attitude, the students will bring this attitude home as well. It's a very small experiment. It has basically matched 28 schools, and there were 80 teachers who were trained in each of 2 years. The experiment was, we matched, so it's unsurprising in a sense. We matched pairs and then we randomly chose one, so it's unsurprising, but you see that the treatment and the control are very similar. There's so the p-values are all very high, meaning there's no close to, nothing is even close to being dissimilar. Treatment and control are very similar. Each school was asked to send 2 to 4 teachers It was, the training was 11 days as a part of the term. During the term holidays, they were structured into typically into 2 days or 3 days at a time, and there were three of such sessions, so 30 days. That's a lot of training. That's the order of magnitude of training that many education systems will have, which is one month of training a year. But it's a lot. This is not meant to be a light touch intervention. It was quite a lot of effort, and the effort was done. 75% of the teachers did all of them, and 40% were trained. So that's the timeline. The baseline was in the end of 2017. The first training started in the beginning of 2018. The second training, so we have data on student learning from December 2018. We have a second round of training. Unfortunately, then you know what happened, and so we have school closures, etc. And so when I show you results 4 years later, this includes Uganda had actually a pretty extensive school closure. So you can see that schools were closed for almost 2 years. So this is all going to be, when I show you the results of what happened to these children, is going to be despite the fact that they were out of school for 2 years. So you might have thought all the learning might have disappeared. So all of that unfortunately happened, but we still, fortunately, we see effects. So that's the, we're going to use the assignment. Not all teachers finish the program. We're going to use the assignment of teachers for the treatment. Okay. So I'll show you some results. Then this is sort of goes back to what I said, which is these are results in the PLE exam. This is the public exam that you have to take to graduate from primary school. So in Uganda, in East Africa in general, primary school goes till 8th grade. So these are relatively older children. So they're not 6 or 8 or 10, they are more close to 14, or 14 or 16 even. They're quite significantly older than what you would call primary age children in France. So this is the effect on measured now in standard deviations. You can see that it's 0.6 standard deviations improvement in science and English, for example. But you can see that you can look at the distribution. That's before whatever standard deviations means, you might say. But if you look at the distribution, all the high scores come from the blues. That's the core fact that you should take away, is that you really see that at the right tail, so only the blues. Okay, so that's where it's coming from. It's coming from the fact that some students just do much better as a result of this. If you look at mathematics, you don't see that. And this is not accidental, because math teachers were not trained. The schools were unwilling to let the math teachers go, so the math teachers were not trained. So social studies, the pass rate in the PLE exam, but even with math, you start to, I'll come back to this point, you start to see maybe some little dribbles of that, because that's not surprising. The children are being asked to be more, you know, more open, more critical, thinking on their feet more. So they might actually, since the evidence in mathematics, and this is some of our work with Esther, for example, shows that, for example, we have some work which shows that children who are, who work in markets in India, who sell things and therefore are extremely good at calculation, your mental calculations, they are able to give change within seconds and give it correctly. When you give them the math exams, they give up and they don't do it. They can't do it, they don't do it. And that's suggesting that there is innate mathematical ability that's not being used by the system. So if you think about what this program is doing, even though it's not training the math teachers, it is training the children to be more confident of what they know, to be to use their own knowledge. And so in that sense, maybe you could see an effect on math, and I'll come back to that point. You'd sort of see it a little bit, maybe at the right tail, but I'll show you some results later. Now, this is what the kind of exam they had. I don't know that it's particularly illuminating, but it's a kind of exam they have. This is what, you know, the curriculum says, and sometimes curriculums say many things. So to see if actually something more specific than just, you know, you look at that exam, maybe all you learn is to tick off boxes. Is there something more that's happening? Is there a real increase in scientific understanding? So to do that, we did something which was, an innovation in Uganda. We organized a series of science shows. Okay, this didn't exist, but it's a place where you go. We had some people who were, I don't know, generally recognized as experts who were were brought as judges, and then all the children from the treatment and control schools were brought to this science fair, basically, and they were all told. The children were made groups of I don't remember how many actually. But, you know, I think four or five, and they were made into groups. Each school sent three or four groups to the science fair, and they were given, and they had to come up with projects that, for example, either on conserving resources in the community, or preparing safe drinking water. And they're supposed to design a strategy and an experiment to evaluate it and all that. So they were asked to do a science presentation, basically, at this fair. And that was true in treatment and control. And the reason we did that is, as you might imagine, we were worried that maybe they are just getting a little bit better at, you know, you saw those, you know, very ambitious but maybe not very ambitiously implemented science curriculum, and maybe they get a little bit better at this, but maybe they have is there a deeper change you see? And the judges were, you know, told that they should judge the framing of the problem, the designing of the experiment, the hypothesis, the outcome measure, and the articulation of the whole story. And so you get one if you had no idea. So on these 15, I think on 12 measures, for example, on measure 3, they were asked to say, the judges were asked to say, did the children have a clearly articulated hypothesis? And they could say, no, I had no idea what they were testing, or they were a very clear hypothesis. So that's the judging rubric. So that's what we find. Basically, almost all the winners in this came from the treatment schools. So you can see that the index is hugely significant and very large. But you can see the distribution. The distribution is, as you move to the right, you start to see mostly blue. And that's, in other words, all the school level winners came from the which was the average of the school. All the winners came from the treatment schools. So you know, they were simply much better at this activity. So they had learned something which was kind of which matched the intention of the program, which is to get them to be better at formulating hypotheses, testing hypotheses, articulating hard hypotheses. And you see a match between them. And you can see these different competence categories. You see significant results on most of them as well. Okay. The other things we also wanted to do were to use other more standard measures of higher order learning and creativity. So these are standard measures taken from the educational practice literature. So there's nothing these we didn't innovate on, on all of them, you know, the different measures we see again very large and very positive effects. So these are really, these are now in standard deviations, and you see, you know, half a standard deviation or three quarters of a standard deviation gain in these. So these are very large gains. And again, if you don't like the standard deviations, you can see that the blue bars are doing very well on all of them. So that's sort of the first fact, which is that it worked. It got these young men and women to be much more scientific, better at scientific method, better at sort of higher order learning, better at taking exams, at all levels it worked. What can we say something about what happened actually? Can we see change not just in what they do, but what happens in the classroom? And I mean, it's so these come from classroom observations. So these have the usual problem of classroom observation, where somebody was sitting in the classroom and taking notes on what's happening. You could worry about, maybe these children are more confident and therefore they are more able to, they're more willing to ask questions in a when there's an observer. So it may well, I can't tell you that that's not true. So there's some danger that what we are observing is a bit what we put in, which is that these kids are more confident and they are therefore asking more questions. So I'm not saying, I can't say that that didn't happen, but we do see, again, the fraction of children who are engaged, who are by different metrics of being engaged, is larger in treatment than in control. So if you look at the bottom right, the graphic, the blues are learning kinds of things. The pinks are doing something else, chatting with their friends. Okay, so you can see that the chatting with their friends goes up, goes down, and being engaged with what is being taught goes up. So, I mean, there's a. This is when the teacher is not present. When the teacher is not present, are they discussing what they heard in class, or they're chatting about something else? And they're more likely to be discussing what's happening in class than chatting with what's happening. So we asked students to recall whether they asked teacher for help and which teachers. And we also asked them if they got beaten. And I can tell you that corporal punishment is very common in Uganda. I'll show you the means in a minute. So in other words, the fact that the children were intellectually more engaged didn't change the disciplinary climate in the school. You'll see that in a minute. Corporal punishment didn't change at all. 53% of children classrooms had corporal punishment, and that didn't change at all. On the other hand, children asked more questions. The fraction of children asking questions during the observation went from 22% to 28%, so a quarter increase in asking questions. So there's, again, some evidence that this is happening at the classroom level. It's not just something that's somehow in the air. It's behavior is changing. Now, the teacher, interesting, I suggested that if you think the students are more likely to be a source of knowledge, if you can talk to them as, you know, knowledgeable beings rather than vessels for filling or bank accounts for pouring money into, then you might actually also get to them, know them better. So we ask students a bunch of things about themselves. Basically, three questions: Did you attend school yesterday? Did you attend school day before? And who do you live with? In Uganda, in particular, a lot of these upper primary children don't live with their parents because their parents live in remote places, and therefore they have to go live somewhere where there's a school, an upper primary school. So they often live with their uncle or their, you know, some other relative. So these were the three questions we asked them. And then we asked the teachers whether they knew the answers to these questions. So do you know who your students are? And particularly, did they come to class? Did you notice them? Did you notice who was there 2 days ago? The other set of questions are about teachers and talking to other teachers. If you are more confident about the fact that you're not supposed to know the answer, that you're supposed to, you know, find out by talking to people, then you might actually be more willing to exchange knowledge with others because you are I mean, there could be other things happening. Maybe they made friends when they went to the program that was getting them to have this attitude. So I'm not going to say that this is proof that they were talking more because of a different attitude to knowledge, but it's consistent with it. So we find that teachers talk to other teachers more, and teachers know more about students. And teachers know actually a fair amount, interestingly. 60% of the questions they get right, so that's quite a lot. They know a fair amount. It still goes up by another 10 percentage points. And again, they do talk to other teachers, and that goes up. So reassuringly, you see all the symptoms of a better functioning school. We have other results. We look at whether teachers are using more precise language, for example. That was one of the starting points of the pedagogical exercise, was to get them to use more precise language, and they do. It's not because they know more. It's because they use, so you ask them content questions, they are about equally good. So the teachers don't learn things, and that's, of course, intentional, because they were not taught anything. They were just encouraged to discuss. So it's not that their knowledge goes up. What goes up substantially is their use of language, of asking more questions, and they are, in general, more sympathetic to the children. We have measures of these things. So here's a especially you can see that in treated schools in general, teachers are more involved with the science shows that I told you about. And that's true at different points in the distribution. It's generally true. They use more precise language. They're more gentle in the language they use. Doesn't stop them from beating the children, however. Finally, what happens in the long run? So we go back. Remember, all of this ended in 2019. We go back in 2022 to look at what happened. So what's happening to these children? So the children are more likely to be between 8 and 12 percentage points more likely to be in secondary school. They're in better schools also. They're in secondary school, they're in better schools. The other thing we can do is we can ask, is it the case that in these schools where training, there were three rounds of training, the last round of training was in 2022, do we still see treatment effects? So is one time excitement, was it one time excitement? But no, you get very similar treatment effects, and now you start to see it on math. The culture seems to have changed. You see effects on math. This is why I suggested that there might be an effect before. You start to see an effect on math in all of the grades, actually. So this is the effect on being treated in 2018. So the teachers were treated in 2018. This is learning outcomes for children who were treated in 2018 in 2022, and you can see that they're still doing significantly better in math and reading, and in actually everything else, but they're not all significant. So they're 4 years later, after their teachers, 4 years after their teachers were trained, they retain the learning gains. They stick for, it's very cost effective, because in a sense, the person who does the animator for these programs is not expensive, because he's not a specialist. He's just someone who's trained by the NGO to be, good at getting people to talk. It's not, but he's not actually, he doesn't need to be a specialist by himself. So this is one of the cheapest ways to improve test scores, according to this. So overall, this program is was a success. It was a success, I think, largely because the teachers seemed to have imbued the lessons that the NGO wanted to get, which are not, is what we almost always say, but rarely, unfortunately, do, which is teachers should be mostly in the business of, asking questions and helping people formulate questions in helping them think through the answers rather than delivering answers to people. So that's something that is often said. It says all, and at least in this context of in many of the contexts that we have studied in developing countries, rarely done. I think the good news is that it's not so hard to do. It's doable. The teachers are open to it. We didn't have any particular political problem with this, because it was not never told as you are going to be given all this additional knowledge. You were just told this is for you to, discuss with your colleagues and, get better at discussing. And there was there was no resistance to it. And this program continues. What we don't know, I told you that there could be effects at the community level. We're hoping that we go back and find those. We see if these, this scientific mindset, after all these, now they are 20, many of them, or 18, and they are obviously, themselves earning, and so are they labor market effects? Are they effects on the community? Are they organizing, using their scientific knowledge to make agriculture run better, for example? All of these questions we are interested in, and will maybe in a year or so have some answers. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.